Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Thanks for watching us on YouTube. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. It is Foxworth Friday. Dominique Foxworth, what's going on?
Man, it's supposed to be a slow period right now. I feel like we got a ton of stuff to get through.
Oh, yeah. No, I'll give this to the NBA. Once they decided to start the season earlier, that meant that after the All-Star break meant there was only 20 games left. So we don't get that dragging part of the season. You know, like the dog days in baseball of July and August, the NBA got rid of those. They like, oh, them dog days? Y'all ain't going to be watching no way. Y'all going to be on this football. Okay, cool. We'll come back and we'll be rip-roaring to go. And actually, as we... People don't know, me and you get here, what are we going to talk about today? Oh, well, we'll start with one thing, then we'll go to something else. But I didn't even tell you I was going to talk about this, but were you watching that game on Sunday when LeBron got hurt?
Yeah.
Okay. I said on Twitter, I was like, two things. One, he's an alien for finishing that game. Mm-hmm. B, he's clearly a human because he ain't playing again this year, I don't think. Like, based on what they were saying and everything else, and it was the dreaded non-contact injury. LeBron has only played 60 games in Los Angeles that bubble year. And we don't know if he plays 60 games that year if they don't get 3 months off and then resume the season without having to travel. And I bring that up because it's something I've talked about for the longest. He is as incredible as any 38-year-old has ever been. He is certainly as incredible as any 20-year vet has ever been. But them cats don't be retiring because they can't play anymore when they can play. They be retiring because they can't play anymore because they can't. You know what I mean? Like, because they physically can't get out there. You go back there and people talk about, oh, Jordan with the Wizards. Jordan was balling with the Wizards. Like, he wasn't balling like 1988 with the Wizards, but he was balling except old and hurt.
Yeah.
And with LeBron, it's been hurt every year and it's been nothing major, right? Like, if I'm not mistaken, LeBron has only undergone anesthetic in his life to have his wisdom teeth removed. Right? And that's a big thing. I told you about that when I met Larry Fitzgerald doing Costas. And somebody was like, yo, Larry, how many surgeries have you had? He's like, zero. Like, that's a line of demarcation with those super-duper top-notch athletes is literally never having to have surgery. So he gets all these little things, but little things when you old ain't little.
Yeah, my reaction to the LeBron stuff is, like, immediate, emotional, and selfish. Like, I want more LeBron, but it's been 20 years. We probably got 10 more years of LeBron, like, peak-level LeBron than any of us should have gotten. And if you count the number of games, the fact that he never really missed games until recently is unbelievable. The alien stuff, yeah. I'm not willing to say that about many people, but there's something special about not just his body, but his like spatial awareness, like proprioception, like to be able to avoid injury. It's some part luck. And it's not like he's avoided bad plays. Like, we just seen him roll his ankle a ton of times. He just laced them shits up tighter and go play some more ball. We see people fall on his knees. And that is also avoiding stuff like that. It's just, of all the things about LeBron that we could applaud, this is one that, like, it's hard to appreciate because it's, like, kind of, like, proving a negative. But, like, he always out there. And if we lose him for the rest of the year, that sucks. I'm still holding out some hope that he's going to do some alien shit and come back and push them into the playoffs so we can get some more LeBron. But the fact of the matter is, we've been on borrowed time for some time. Like, the last, I don't know, 5 years, realistically, him playing at this level is, like, crazy. It's nuts before that. But to still be putting out and still be, like, a part of the core of a team that at least we thought could have been competitive when they got Vanderbilt and all that stuff. It's like mind-blowing at year 20. Can't imagine it.
Well, the tragedy, if there's a tragedy, because I know that sounds incredibly dramatic, but like if there's a tragedy in this is Anthony Davis has finally turned into, all right, I got it.
Yep.
Right? Like you go look at that stretch in that game against Dallas. Like you go look at that. Like it finally had come out of him. And this year, he has been, when he has played, a better player than LeBron.
Yeah.
Like, I don't even know if there's really much discussion about that one. But They not built for it to be Anthony Davis carrying those other guys. It's built for Anthony Davis to, the plan, at least the way they told us, for Anthony Davis to move into that number one position and LeBron be the number two. But you can't be the number two if you're not playing. And they got, what, two more years of LeBron under that deal? So what do you do?
You look back at that bubble title and have a parade that you never had for it because of the pandemic? Like, I don't know. It's hard to argue, or it's impossible, in my view, to argue that it's something that they shouldn't have done. And given the power dynamics in the NBA, you pay LeBron, you trade what you have to get AD, and there have been some bad decisions along the way outside of those two, but it puts you in the situation. And I don't, like, this. Everything comes with a price. Everything has a cost. And it's not just the amount of money you have to pay out. It's the opportunity cost. And, yeah, it's a risk worth taking. And I know the bubble title don't feel like it's that special, but it's a risk that paid off.
It's a title.
Yeah, it's a title.
It's a title, but, I mean, and you have to ask Lakers fans this, right? Like, I don't want to project upon them, but they got the one title and they haven't gotten a playoff series win outside of that. It's like his time there has basically been like Eli Manning's career. We got these 2 years that really jump off the page with Eli, but they never won a playoff game with him as quarterback outside of those 2 years. And those 2 years jump out. But to me, it's not so much that it was a bubble title, like if I were a fan, is that you ain't really get to lean into it, yeah, right? If you think about it, they had that year they won that title. But outside of that, dog, they've been terrible for 10 years. Like, in the aggregate, they've been terrible. They haven't been terrible every year with LeBron. But even this year, man, I don't care if everybody in the West is the same. They've been the 13.
Yeah.
Like, in a 15-team conference. They've consistently been behind the Oklahoma City Thunder, who most of us believed were tanking.
Yeah. The problem with like trying to use this title to justify it is, like, I think it makes sense for the people in the building, but I don't think it makes sense for a fan. And this, like, goes on something that I know you agree with, is like the money balling of everything, how it sucks the personality and fun out of the game if you turn everything into a business. Justifying the trade is something that I think makes sense for the front office and the people on the team, and like saying, we got a title though, but this is entertainment for the fans. Like, has it been fun? Have you enjoyed this? It, like, when LeBron broke the record, we still, like, this is every, it felt like every year or so, we all tried to say, this is the time when LeBron becomes a Laker. And it never really felt like he became a Laker. It never really felt like the Lakers fans accept him. And it never really felt like they was having any fun with any of it.
No, that felt like it was a Hollywood moment. Like, it was a big deal for, and I know people use Hollywood as a pejorative term, but they're like, all the stars are out. Like, it was a collision in that way to be able to do it all, to do it in LA. You got Denzel, right? You got everybody else that's there. I was talking to somebody about this, and the point that was made was they like him down there, but like, he ain't Kobe. They love Kobe, right? They like him there, but it's, I don't know. It's hard, you know, because people think I hate LeBron. I do think, though, it's time to go, right? Like, I don't hate him. I do think he has overstayed his welcome. I do think that his consistent presence in the NBA is not a net positive for the league because he just takes so much oxygen, right? He just gets so much sunlight when people need to be paying attention to everything else that's going on. Like, again, I would like to make the note, Jokic is up there having one of the greatest seasons of all time, and we not even enjoying it. We arguing about it, right? But we not even really enjoying it. There's so many fascinating things that are going on in the NBA right now. And not that all we do is talk about LeBron. Like, we're not there. Yeah. But he still commands an inordinate amount of attention that's going on in a way that for a league normally, like, Kareem was still in the league, but Kareem wasn't the center of nothing. He wasn't even the center of his own team. So, like, I think it's time for him to go, but I don't hate the dude. I love what he's done for these 20 years.
That's interesting, though, because, I mean, I guess I have two questions coming off of that. Is one, if he went away, would we just talk less basketball, or would we actually focus on these stories? Like, by we, I mean the general fan public. It's like, is he actually eating up attention that other players would get? And then the other thing is this something new about, like, that we've moved into this, like, celebrity generation that is, like, I guess the point I'm trying to make is I remember other greats as their career was waning. We stopped paying as much attention to them. They became a sideshow. And LeBron, despite the fact that he's been on bad teams, we convince ourselves that he's still the main event. Is that something different about us now?
So, what is interesting about Michael Jordan's career that we talk about it, but we don't talk about it in this context. He always left before we got tired of it. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know if we were going to get tired of it. Three championships, out of here. Mm-hmm. Three more championships, out of here. Even with the Wizards, came back for two, right? But he always got out before it was a thing. And then after that, it was the who's going to fill the space? Who's going to be the next Michael Jordan? Well, in that first run, it was fair to say nobody else stepped up. After the second run, the answer was Shaquille O'Neal. And we made the rotation into paying attention to the Lakers. And even after Jordan's return, the Lakers were the centerpiece of what we talked about. I don't think we watched less basketball as a result. But the other thing that I would say is what we didn't have in 93 that we had in, say, 2013. Like, let's say LeBron had retired after 2013 like Jordan did, right? Yeah. Just throw that as a hypothetical. Standing right there was Kevin Durant.
Yeah.
And who, by the way, in the 2013-14 season was the best player in the NBA, right? Mm-hmm. And made, not just was the best player in the league for that season, you could make an argument that at that point, Kevin Durant legitimately became the best player in the NBA. Problem was he got hurt the next season. And then you didn't see it, but you go look numerically, he might have been the best player in the NBA. We never have ever had a legitimate who you got Durant or LeBron debate. We never have, right? Yeah. But what did happen was the Warriors emerged. Something that we never thought was possible, something that we never saw coming. They emerged, and then LeBron took their asses down after they was up 3-1.
So sick.
And that was when it was just like, okay, we just go ride this.
Yeah.
I got you. Okay. I misunderstood. We're just going to take this out. Think about that. After that point, we ain't even really had hardcore who's the best player in the NBA discussions. We kind of dabble around it a little bit now again because of the Jokic thing. But otherwise, we ain't really do it because LeBron scared us. We ain't never going to talk about that ever again.
But we know it's not LeBron, but we still give him the attention. His team's not relevant. He's not the best. We still give him the attention like he's the protagonist of the league. I wonder if it's also because there hasn't been a single guy that rose up. Like, it was, we thought it was going to be Giannis. But we think it's going to be Jokic.
But Kevin Durant did rise up. He did.
Not.
He got no credit for coronation for going to the Warriors. Like, the part that I always said that Durant, it'd be fuck y'all forever.
Yeah.
I hit shots in LeBron's eye to win championships.
It is face.
And I didn't get no credit for it. He didn't take no slack for it. And we used to look for any reason to give LeBron slack. He ain't take no slack for it. I ain't get no credit. Like, all those things actually happened. Like, you had the days. You had the move where Moses Malone took it from Kareem. Like, those things actually happened. Dog, no. We were like, after 3-1, it was so impressive that we told LeBron, all right, you keep arguing about whether or not he Jordan, but not once he had to explain whether or not he one of these other cats. And even the ones that got better, we'd be like, oh, yeah, well, he's better than LeBron now. Anyway.
Moving on.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The Durant situation with the like random like cap explosion that allowed them to get him, like that, while I recognize that Durant was great and you recognize that he was great, like it's impossible for the general fan to not to treat him like he's risen to LeBron's level, given what LeBron did the prior season. Is he beat them 73-9?
But I'm saying he got better than LeBron in 2014. Because the difference between Kevin Durant and LeBron in 2013, and you really can't split it up in these years. The difference is 2013 version of LeBron was a game-changing defender, maybe the best defensive player in the NBA. LeBron James has not made an all-defense team since 2013, right? Because the argument that you could make was he was just a much better defender than Kevin Durant. And Kevin Durant has probably been a better defensive player ever since, but we've never viewed him as a game. I don't think he's ever made an all-defense team, even though he can guard 3-4 positions. He can protect the rim. He can guard on the perimeter. He's got the long arms, all of that stuff. We never gave him that credit. Like, that's the hold up with Jokic. It ain't about numbers and everything else. It's that Giannis is a game-changing defender. Embiid is a game-changing defender. Jokic is not a game-changing defender, even if he's a capable one. And that's, I think, the holdup.
Yeah, I had that conversation on my podcast with Charlie a little bit and trying to figure out what it is about the Nuggets that makes me a non-believer. Because, like, as far as championship is concerned, and I think it's just, like, the history of, like, dominant wings and two-way defenders being the championship. Like, there's some aberrations, but normally along those lines, there's going to be a team that is great at defense, and normally because their best player is also a wing player. It's not going to be like run through the post with a small guard in Jamal Murray, who's capable of blacking out in the playoffs, we know, but I don't know. I have a hard time looking at them, and now that Durant's playing with the Suns, man, his mid-range game, like, it feels like he cannot be, it feels like he can't be defended. Like, it like legitimately feels like if he wants 2 points every time down the floor, he can get it. Like, he's quick enough, his ball handle is good enough, and he's 7 feet tall still.
Yo, I say, can you imagine how frustrating it is the moment that you realize he's 7 feet and you can't take his dribble, right? You'd be like, all right, cool, go ahead, big man, do that, right? It's like Rudy Gobert walks up and faces up on you. Cool, put it on the ground, watch what happens. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Kevin Durant's like, no, I got something for that too. How can you get those arms from your hip and get a shot up that fast that nobody can do anything about it?
I can't imagine. I was just watching that game last night and just like getting frustrated on behalf of the entire league. You know, and obviously the Hornets aren't like a real legitimate threat, but still, they had long Kelly Oubre out there trying to defend him, like Hayward out there trying to defend him, like decently athletic, long dudes, and they can't do nothing with him. You want to play off, he can shoot the three as good as anybody. You want to press up on him. Like, this is like remedial basketball stuff that we all know, but sometimes it's important just to be like, damn. And then they got Booker, who also is like deadly in the mid-range. And Chris Paul, he's old, but he's still creating opportunities for Ayton.
Here's the thing about mid-range game to me, and this is where I hate the dorks.
Yeah.
Because the dorks just want to eliminate the mid-range game completely and ignore the fact, it's something we talk about with football. All those macro level stats from the regular season are cool, but when it gets cold outside, a whole lot of that stuff don't matter no more. You know what I'm saying? Like once you start playing against this different echelon of teams, like a great example, Peyton Manning. Now, granted, he played a lot of those games indoors, but when the windows got tighter because they let him play a little bit more physical and the defenders are more likely to be quick and long-armed in the secondary, Peyton Manning not having the strongest arm suddenly mattered, right? That's how the playoffs change. And the thing with the playoffs, where I look at the Nuggets, in the playoffs, Howard always makes this point. A 15-footer is an 18-footer. An 18-footer is a three-pointer. A three-pointer might as well be a half-court heave, right? Like, everything changes once you get there. And so for the Nuggets, Jokic can get those easy shots for people, but them shots aren't easy like they used to be easy shots. And that was the problem LeBron would often have. Is that same thing. And so with Jokic, it's going to be like, hey, partner, like, we have, LeBron played like eight the most important game of his career games, right? Like in that Miami stretch, we had so many of them where it was like, yo, this is the most important game of his career. Game six against Dallas in 2011. Game six and seven against Boston in 2012. Game six and seven in 2013 against the Spurs. You know what I mean? Like we just kept, we got a new most important game. But what happened in a lot of those and when the switch turned for him was when he looked up and realized, oh, I got to score 45 tonight, huh?
Yep.
Like walked in the door. I got to score 45. That's the part that we haven't seen from Jokic. We've seen him put up the numbers, but not the, I'm going to put up 45, you're going to jump on my back, and we're going to win, and maybe every now and then I need you guys to hit a shot. But a game plan that's dependent on getting other guys easy shots is not as conducive for success in the playoffs as it is in the regular season.
That's good. I like that. I'm going to use that now as my reasoning, because before, it's honestly, I just look at this team, and maybe that's subliminally or subconsciously, that's what I'm also viewing, but I just look at this team, and I'm like, nah, this, I just don't see it. Like, the West is weak, and maybe they could win the West, but, like, I wouldn't bet on them. I definitely wouldn't bet on them win the title, which is a shitty way to talk about them, because they're great, and Jokic is great. But that's what I end up coming back to. And your point about the mid-range stuff is, like, yeah, I'm with you. The thing about the nerds in analytics is, like, layups, free throws, and threes. Yeah. That's for the normal guys.
That's exactly. Okay, you know what? Yeah. When I started talking, I forgot what I was actually going to say.
Yeah. I brought you back.
Yeah, that was the point I wanted to make right there is, yeah, like Carmelo shoots so many mid-range shots. I understand why you don't want these other dudes to shoot mid-range shots. Have you looked up Carmelo's number on mid-range shots? They're not bad, guys.
Yeah. I mean, the point about Moneyball is if you think back to the origins of Moneyball, it's about like optimizing when you ain't got
more with less.
Yeah. When you got a motherfucker. That is Kevin Durant. Don't you dare tell him where he can and can't shoot or what he can and can't do. You tell these other guys, y'all set some screens, you go stand in the corner, create space, and let him do whatever it is the hell he want to do.
But also, strategically, once you eliminate whole swaths of the floor, you make life a lot easier for the people who are guarding you. Like, I just... Yes, you want to get the best shots that you possibly can. But that whole rubric of setting up a basketball team like that is really popular with people who never played much basketball. And I'm not saying this like I played all the basketball in the world, but it's an intellectual idea. I don't think that it is a like functional experiential idea as much as people like kind of want to make it to be. But you're right. What it does is allow you to get guys you ain't got to pay that much money and put them around and have them do all those little things. But long as I've been alive, I can only think of two ensemble casts that have won championships. Right. The 2004 Pistons and the 2014 Spurs.
Yeah.
And even that ensemble cast had four guys who will eventually be in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, that, the Spurs one is a little bit of a cheat, but it's just because they didn't have one guy who was like scoring a ton of points.
Well, it's because Tim Duncan was old, Ginobili was old, Parker was old, and we didn't realize that Kawhi Leonard thing, we ain't get what that was. You know what I'm saying? But now they was out there with Boris Diaw making shots, Boris Diaw, Danny Green, Patty Mills, Tiago Splitter setting screens.
Yeah. The names on there, like the big names on there could make you think that was not an ensemble cast, but the actual series was a lot more people helping out and a lot more guys chipping, and it wasn't like this the dude.
Yeah, they beat their asses too. They did 2 years.
Oh, so bad.
Something that doesn't really get talked about here is how close the Spurs were to having another dynasty. And it's wild because I think 2011 was the year that they were the 8 seed. And they lost in the first round to the Grizzle. And it was just like, all right, these guys are old, and then they're done. Then they had a 20-game winning streak going before the Thunder rolled off 4 on them in 2012 in the Western Conference Finals. They went to Game 7 the next year against Miami and were that Ray Allen shot away from breaking up the big three. They were going to tear that whole thing down. They were going to tear it all down. They were just going to trade Chris Bosh. And then 2014, they dog-walked the Heat. Uh-huh. Went back, beat the Thunder, and dog walked the Heat.
That Ray Allen shot is so huge, man.
Dude, that is my number one I was there moment.
Yeah.
It was so wild because, you know, for the finals, that press seating gets whack. See, you'll know this, right? And so, like, for the regular season, the people who get down on the front, you know, you normally get to sit courtside, but now there's more media. And so unless you are Dan Le Batard, for example,
right,
you up in the 300s. And when I say Dan Le Batard, I want to be clear. I meant Dan Le Batard, because sitting next to me was Gonzalo Le Batard. Like, we up there, up on the roof. So anyway, I'm there, and the Spurs are up. And my man Ari Temkin, who did radio in San Antonio, was sitting next to me. And him and his guy, they packed up their stuff. They went downstairs. Like, they got to get ready, man. You know, Spurs about to win a championship. These young cats, they ain't seen this. And so I'm like, well, y'all going down? I need to go down, too. I'm going down. All the people are leaving. Like, I posted a picture on Instagram of all the people leaving the building that wound up getting around. I get down to the floor, and there's nowhere for me to be, because I was like, cool, I'll just go, you know, the tunnel. But they got the yellow rope up. Like, they're ready to bring the trophy out. The yellow rope is up. So I'm like, oh, damn. Okay, I guess I just got to, like, kneel down. So I'm kneeling down on the opposite baseline, straight ahead to where Ray Allen was. And he made that shot. I ain't never been around for nothing that crazy.
The closest thing I got to that is the Patriots-Falcons comeback, as I started coming downstairs to get ready to do my post-game interviews. And I actually wrote a story that night for that game. And I like real experienced journalists, like, what you got to do is start writing a story early. But, and so I already got my stuff all ready to go. I got my questions ready. I'm going to come down and get these quotes that I need. And I come down. I'm almost on the field when that sack happened. I get a little closer.
The Matt Ryan sack.
Edelman making stupid catches. And I'm like, oh. So scrap the whole thing up till like 3-4 in the morning. Rewrite a story about sadness. About Falcon sadness. Because I was like, man, I don't have nothing to say about the Patriots. Like, I don't know. And I had so much stuff on the Falcons already. But yeah, that's a tough feeling, man.
Man, I was there. I was like, oh, Miami cracking. Because I just moved there like 2 months before. I got there during the Eastern Conference Finals.
That's dope.
Yeah, man. No, that was that. Those 4 years of LeBron in Miami, honestly, maybe he could stay forever just based on that. Like, that was when we was just every morning, we was all waking up. What would LeBron do? Oh, what would LeBron do? Like, I just feel like you can't do that forever. You know what I'm saying? Even with Jordan, we wasn't waking up every morning being like, yo, what the Bulls do last night? It wasn't that. Those 4 years of the Heat, without championships, with championships, we was just like, what they do now?
That's the thing, man. Like, as critical as we can be for LeBron for a bunch of things, and I know you, like, appreciate and value, like, all the things that he's done for the game of basketball. And, like, frankly, the efforts that he's made outside the game are commendable in their own right, although it's not perfect. But let's talk about what he's meant for the NBA. And we talk about him versus Jordan on the court all the time. I think it's a realistic conversation to talk about him versus Jordan for value to the game. Because we think about Jordan in that era and the Dream Team and how they really globalized the game and how, like, Jordan really made it, or at least to me, growing up, basketball felt big, but basketball was Michael Jordan.
Yeah.
And I think for a whole generation now, basketball, and more than a generation because it's 20 years, basketball is LeBron. And I don't think, even when the Bulls won 72-10, and maybe it's just because the media wasn't as, like ubiquitous then. But I don't think – and it was just 1 year. It wasn't that four-year run. Like, that LeBron stuff was everything.
Everything. I mean, we would come in and on one level, it's like part of it was because I was doing the TV show that was in Miami, right?
Yeah.
But our rundown wasn't different than anybody else's rundown. We knew who everybody was on the Heat. Norris Cole and all of them.
Yeah. Yes. And we were like, it felt like every game, it was like a referendum, at least that first year. Then they get off to like a slow start, and we're like, we're going to blow this up. And every game the whole season, and then, of course, they lose the finals. And then the next season, every game the whole season, like, it was a referendum. It was like how we talk about playoff games.
Yeah.
It felt like every week. And it's like, And I think part of that is why now when the basketball season comes around, I'm like, Like, we got it again with the Warriors when they went 73-9, but it's kind of like, wake me up when the playoffs show. I'll catch a game here or there.
LeBron was like the fugitive, right? Like, there was a cliffhanger at the end of every, at some point in every one of those seasons, there was a cliffhanger, right?
The like, emotional, like we...
Right, like the first year. Oh, damn, he almost got hemmed up when they went 9-8, right? Now it looks like everything is okay, and he's cool, he's safe, he's about to find the one-armed man, and then it fell apart against Dallas, right? It's like, damn, now you got to go over here. Yeah, now you got to go over here and hide. Well, you got to remember the thing about The Fugitive was it was a television show first, and they did four seasons of him almost getting caught every week, and that's what it was with LeBron. The next year, he almost got caught in Boston. Damn, it almost went down. The next year... Damn, they actually almost got caught against Indiana. But she was like, oh, yeah, he going to get out of that. But then the thing came up with the Spurs, and it's like, yo, I don't know how he's going to get out of this one. Then he jumped off a bridge and landed in the water, and everything was all right. And then in 2014, you know, like he found the one-armed man, and he went on about his business. But it was a cliffhanger the whole way.
I had a bunch of other stuff that I had wanted to talk about. I did not intend on this becoming, like, LeBron Central. But the emotional toll that those four seasons took on me? I cannot imagine.
Yes, because everybody I hated was on the other side. That was the thing for us with LeBron. It was like the people I didn't like were all over there.
I became a LeBron fan. I mean, I liked him and respected him, but I became a real deal LeBron fan when he made the decision, and everyone was using that as a reason to hate him. And I was like, this is gross. I became a Heat fan. I was rooting for them, and I hated when they lost in the finals. And, like, obviously, once I get a little further away from it, I can put a little more context around it. But I was emotionally invested in LeBron for them four years.
Hey, I still love the greatest quote of all time. They'll go back to living their lives. I'll go back to living mine. This day, everybody's like, he called everybody broke. No, your broke ass is projected. He just said, I'm going to do me, you going to do you. And you knew that you wish you was doing LeBron James a lot more than you wish that you was doing yourself.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
We're more than a decade past that. Yeah, those moments where you look at how you look at things a little bit differently now in context and everything else. And I had a moment this week where I felt that way, where that Washington Post story about Ja Morant came out. And my thought was, oh, I see why the old people acted like this about Allen Iverson.
Yeah.
Sorry, I felt like y'all was just, you know, because the thing about Iverson, obviously that's a little different, is that there had never been anybody stylistically, culturally like him. Like, he was a representative of a changing of the guard sort of thing. But man, that young man was cruising for a bruising. Like, when you go back and look at them stories and what his partners was doing, you're like, yo, okay. I see why an old person would be like, that boy is trouble. You know what I'm saying? That boy's all this. Except Iverson, when you go back and you look at it, most of those stories, the significant exception being the time it was alleged that he threw his wife out the house, but that wasn't even young Iverson. But all his stories were about his partners acting up. These stories are about Ja acting up. Like, Shannon Sharp, I was watching one of those clips where he had, we were talking about Ja, and he said something about, why are you hanging with these guys? These guys going to get you in trouble. You need to be saying that to these cats that's hanging with Ja. Ja seems to be the guys. He the one showing the tool to a teenager.
Allegedly.
Allegedly, thank you. Allegedly showing the tool to a teenager. Because, no, I ain't going to lie. I ain't gonna lie. So I'm gonna pull the game theory curtain back just a little bit. Y'all remember when Brittany Griner got locked up?
Yeah.
We had jokes.
Yeah.
Because jokes is what we have. And the jokes I thought were pretty funny. And I don't think the jokes were inappropriate. Like, yo, you know where you can and can't be taking your weed. And Russia sees like it'd be high on the list, right? Wearing your Black Lives Matter shirt. Like, you can wear whatever you want. But, you know, like it's a lot of things going on or whatever. We had jokes. And then she was in jail for like a year. And it was like, okay, we should hold up. So we had a week this year when that story came out about Ja Morant and the pickup game. If you haven't seen it, Ja Morant had a teenager at his house for a pickup game. Some things got heated and Ja Morant allegedly put the paws on the boy. Now, the story as we had gotten it before was something that happened and Ja said he put the paws on the boy because the boy threw a ball at him that like either hit him in the head or whizzed past his head. And not going to lie, at 17 years old, I don't know what the law says, but I'm not calling the cops if you get your ass whooped by a grown man if you are trying to comport yourself as a grown man under those circumstances. So in this case, now the story seems to be that Ja gave him the hard check ball chest pass and the kid tried to give him the hard check ball chest pass back, but Ja missed it. The ball went through his hands and hit him in the face. And then Ja decided he wanted to fight and then after Ja start fighting him, allegedly, Ja's mans jumps in to start fighting the 17-year-old. And then they say, Ja go in the house, come back out, got that thang on him. The Washington Post also reported that Ja had gotten into something at the mall in Memphis with a security guard and showed the thang to those people. To which I say again, I don't recall a story of Allen Iverson pulling the showing the tool. Because honestly, pulling and showing are the same thing in this context. I don't recall any story of Iverson doing any such thing. This he seems to be the problem. And as an older person in my 40s, I now look at him like, young man, you are cruising for a bruising.
Yeah, that and his crew, whatever these guys are, why have a crew of presumably less talented people if they not the tool told us?
What is your job?
Like, this is the only reason why you are here. And if something is about to happen, you doing the foolishness. Like, we should, none of us should be involved in any foolishness, but why are you here if I gotta show it? Like, why are you here if I gotta punch a 17-year-old? Like, this is, you know why you guys can play basketball in the middle of the day with me? Because I play basketball for a living. All this stops. All of it stops. You know the girls that come around that want to talk to you now? They gone. All this stops if I get locked up. So I will never put myself in any situation like this. But if I'm in this situation, we get pulled over, the weed is in your pocket. Or I guess weed's not a concern anymore. Whatever y'all got, the contraband is on you.
Oh, it's still Tennessee, baby. They you know. Well, Dominique, we are talking about his homeboys. But in the story in the Washington Post, they said that when he came out there with the tool for the teenager, his daddy, not the teenager's daddy, Ja Morant's daddy was in the house and ran out saying, Ja, no. And I'm like, your daddy ran out saying, no, Ja, no, as opposed to motherfucker, what's wrong with you? Like, Ja Morant is still young enough to where your daddy does not think you're a grown up. You know what I'm saying? Especially not this generation of parents. How is your daddy not coming out there like, boy, what's wrong with you? You about to mess up your money out here doing this. That's the part that gets me. Your daddy is everywhere all the time at all these games and all of this stuff. So, and you still at a point where, because look, I'm not saying it was right. I'm not buying into tropes or whatever it is. But every time Allen Iverson got in trouble, you know somebody was out there. You see what the problem is? That boy daddy ain't around and wasn't there to guide him and show him what it was. This motherfucker's daddy's at every game.
And apparently at his house.
at his house. And you still getting down like this.
Hold on. We can't let his mom off the hook.
No. We can't let his mom off the hook. But I can put it all on his dad. I'm sorry. Like, this is on those. I understand that this may be an antiquated way to look at things, right?
Right.
But when it's somebody's job to snatch you by the shoulders and put your little ass against the wall,
no,
it's your daddy's job. Hold on.
I'm not disagreeing with you on that.
Yeah.
I'm saying specifically, his mother got into an altercation, allegedly, with someone at a Finish Line at a mall in Memphis.
Oh, that's right.
His mother, so the beef at the mall was because his mother got in a beef at Finish Line and called Ja to come to the mall.
Oh, I missed that
part. And Ja showed
up
with somewhere from 9 to 13 of his friends to straighten this out and got into a beef with the security guard. Somebody mushed the security guard, allegedly, in the head in a parking lot. Then the police came. Like, my mother was the type that was not shy about setting people straight. But at no point in my life, as an adult or otherwise, was she gonna call me to get some stuff straight. Like that, like this type of stuff. Whatever, I don't know what the altercation was in the Finish Line, but whatever it is, why are you gonna call him to come? Like, what? I just don't get that at all. And I don't know.
What was Josh supposed to do?
Exactly.
Whatever you needed Ja to straighten out, if Ja Morant was the master key, you could have done that on FaceTime. Like, oh shit, you're Ja Morant's mama.
He's in his 20s. He's supposed to be calling you to get shit straight.
Mm. Yeah, look, I say this somewhat jokingly, but I honestly think, like, y'all ain't called Z-Bo.
Yeah.
I'm talking about the Grizzlies. Like, yeah, if there's anybody that it seems very clearly that this young man needs to talk to understand what his life is now, it's Z-Bo. Uh-huh. Right? I mean, look, you can go look it up on Z-Bo. I ain't even, I'll let you go find the particulars of it. But in the end, Z-Bo became model citizen, retired Jersey, community stalwart, all of that stuff. But Z-Bo, say this for Z-Bo, the stories about Z-Bo's people allegedly stomping somebody out, it always sounded like Z-Bo had a point. Like that time somebody tried to charge Z-Bo too much for a half ounce, and Z-Bo allegedly was like, yo, that price kind of high. And the dude was like, yeah, man, I figure you good for it. I understand why Z-Bo didn't appreciate being exploited for his good fortune and had that dude stomped out, right? Like, no, like it would be stuff like that. Also, Z-Bo was of it.
Yeah.
Ja Morant does not appear to be of it, but Z-Bo gonna explain to him, hey, man, the way you kicking it, that ain't necessarily going to end well. I will say this, and I don't think I'm being dramatic. Boy, they shot Dolph outside the cookie store. Like, you out here in Memphis among regular people with guns out and rolling up with 9, 10, 11, 12 people to go handle something? I don't know why it is that all these cats like Ja think they bought the last gun. Right? Like somebody hit him, yo, we got this new, ain't even came out yet. You think you the only person that's out here with a gun? Yeah. You don't know who that security guard's brother is, who that security guard's cousin is. You don't know who any of these people are or who you trampling on that one day is like, just you wait till the next time I see that dude. They don't care if you in the NBA in Memphis.
Nah, I don't know if you have the same experience, but like, I understand the like allure of being the hard dude.
Yeah.
Like, I remember trying to be that guy. And then I never got this close to that. Like, I remember trying to be that guy because when we were growing up, that was the only type that was like acceptable. You know what I mean? That was the only expression of like masculinity that was acceptable. Y'all got all types of things out there that's cool now. Like, you can be all these other things. So like, I know that people putting out there that like Ja is like faking or trying to do something different than who he actually is. Maybe that's who he actually is.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I don't, like I said, they like he around the wrong people or people around the wrong Ja. Like,
and they like talk about he grew up in a two parent home and like lived in I lived in the suburbs, two parent home. In Baltimore County, my closest friend, two parent home, his dad was a teacher, his mom was a nurse. He did 7 years because he wanted to be hard and he was selling cocaine out of his mom's minivan. And he actually ended up doing quite well and was doing so well that them people snitched on him.
Yeah, now he's doing so well, and now he's doing time.
Yeah. Like, I mean, if you just stay around low-key, you just doing enough to get by, it tends not to be a problem. But he want to be hard. He want to beat people up. He want to take people territory. He want to brandish weapons, and eventually he's going to come back and get you. And, like, nothing about his brother, like, went on to University of Maryland and is, like, a performing arts major. Like, it's just all... He ended up not having to do 7 because he got off on a technicality, an illegal search. But anyway, it was the fact of the matter is, assuming that somebody had two parents in their neighborhood mean that they ain't got it in them, you don't know who you're dealing with.
Tell that to your man, Dion, by the way. We don't have time to, like, fully get into his madness, but tune into Game Theory, where I will dabble into such things. But, yeah, the NBA, my understanding is the league looking at John like, here, dog, you stay over there. And it's wild because that city loves Z-Bo. I'm telling you, they're going to get tired of this stuff with Ja real fast because this is just reckless. Like this, like I say, it brings out that age in me where I'm just like, young man, this is not the way for you to
He was supposed to be the next yourself. Thing, too.
Yeah, and he can be. But that team is getting annoying. He's acting ridiculous. Like, and by the way, they were the 2 seed last year. They're going to be the 2 seed this year. People going to start being like, so what time is it with you winning? Right? Mm-hmm. Like, Dame Lillard has never gotten the hell for not winning because Dame Lillard's teams have never been good enough that anybody thought that they should win. They've not teased us. Jokic's teams have been good enough at points to tease us. This year's one of them, and that's where the hell's going to come. You out here acting an ass in the streets and you not winning? Boy, it's coming for you. I'm just telling you right now. But honestly, I don't care about the press. I don't care about that. I hope that boy stays alive. And don't think... This is why the thing with his dad gets me. Me and my brother talk about, my brother had a dude who he brought home one time. And I think, Dominique, you like me. Me and my brother have both brought home a motley crew of individuals to our parents' house. Mm-hmm. Because as a young black man, you could be upwardly mobile and doing all these things, but your partners is your partners, right? Mm-hmm. We all kick it. We not all the same. You all, you know. Yeah. And so my brother brought some cat home for Christmas in college. I can't remember what happened, but something happened and my daddy peeped his whole steez and my daddy came and pulled him to the side and was like, that boy is a loser.
I've heard that.
It's a loser. The harshest thing you can say about anybody in this world is that they a loser. Like you think about this, like what it takes for you to just be like, dog, that dude's a loser. And when you hear if somebody were to say to you that you a loser, like, oh my God, but my dad was like, yo, that boy's a loser. And whether it be my dad or my brother, who's 13 years older than me, so, you know, somewhat in that same zone, they ain't never identified somebody as a loser or you need to stop messing with them and been wrong. Not a single time. And that's the thing I think about when I see Ja. And that's why I look at his dad where I'm like, how are you not telling that boy, hey, man, we got to get these cats up out of here. You going to mess up all your money.
Yeah, his dad, like, I don't know. I'm hesitant to make all these broad proclamations about these people that I don't know that well, but like it feels like his dad's more a part of the crew than his father, you know?
I would have the same problem with you with broad proclamations if we didn't with our own eyes see his daddy around all the time.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like he's physically there. He seems to be, as you said, in the crew. There's not one person to stop this.
Yeah, I know that when I was in my 20s and I like you said, just bring the old man out to you and I would hear somebody say something like this, my reaction would be like, just because he dressed like that, just because he comports himself in a certain way, you're going to assume all this, that, and the other. Because like, I don't have, other than these alleged stories, I don't have no hard, fast things, but it's something about you, if you like... You are a prey in the jungle. You see them stripes.
Yes.
You know what time it is.
That's what I'm saying.
And I don't have to wait to see you start stalking.
That's what I'm saying. Your point is like, yeah, but we're not just saying this just because he dressed like that, right? Like when you're younger and you hear the old head say that, it sounds like you just like, yo, just because he dressed like that. I remember this. My good buddy Shattered was. There was a dude named Dwight Jones. I think Dwight was after you were in school, so you would remember. Dwight was a 5-star wide receiver that went to North Carolina, and there had been all kinds of questions about the people people around him and chat or anything else. Weirdly, one day, Butch Davis just decided to burn his red shirt to have him run routes. Like, he didn't even have the ball thrown to him after he hadn't played all year long, and then sent him to media availability, which made no sense. And Shannon was talking about the dudes that was there with him, and he was like, I think he referred to them as goons, and I was like, oh, come on. And Shannon's like, I'm from Hampton, Virginia. I know a goon when I see a goon. Like, he was offended that I had intimated that perhaps that he could not properly identify a goon. I know a goon when I see a goon. And that's the thing. We get to a point where it's like, no, I know the difference.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, yeah. I don't know. And it don't mean I can't be wrong, but it does seem like, yeah.
Well, also, Josh said at some point after these stories came out that, you know, he's going to do this stuff to, what do you say, protect his peace. Your peace is clearly not the problem, fool.
Yeah, yeah.
The problem seems to be your attempts to protect your peace.
Yeah, I've been to the rookie symposium, where they, try to prepare everybody for all the things that they're going to have to deal with. And, like, understanding that you can't kick it how you used to kick it. And I don't know how he used to kick it. And I don't know exactly how he is kicking it now. But, like, making that leap is a hard leap to make, because it's real nice, I think, to still experience the things that you experienced before, but now as the big man with all the praise and money, like, you got to let that go. Like, you can be, yeah, and this is why I'm hesitant, because I hear the old man in my voice. I hear it in my voice. I'm that guy now. I'll be 40 at the end of this month. I just got accepted. Lean into it.
Yeah.
Lean into it.
I know things now I did not know before.
Yeah. And the hardest thing is, like, how do you, because I'm thinking about my kids this whole time, is like, how do you communicate that to somebody in a way that they will receive it? Because I remember being young and I remember people saying exact same things to me and me just like, nah, man, I don't know what they talking about. You know, like, I don't know how to convince them that I do know what I'm talking about. They have to learn it themselves in a low risk way, is the only way I could think of, is they got to see it. I don't know. I might read this John Morant story to my 10-year-old when he get home. Just read it to him with no comment. I'm just going to read it to him and then see what he got to say about it. Because I know I know at some point we're going to have this where my kid's going to bring home people that I'm like, nah. Or they're going to do some stuff where I'm like, nah, that's stupid. And me saying, nah, that's stupid ain't going to be enough. It may not be enough, I guess.
Nah, to be fair, me and you grew up in a slightly different way than your wife. I grew up, like, class-wise closer to your wife, but in terms of the actual people I grew up around, it's a little closer to you. That boy ain't bringing none of the people home. that ain't, I am now. What he might bring home that I'm looking forward to is the first time he bring home lady with a tetra or pentasyllabic name. I think it'd be more likely he crossed the aisle on that one. It'd be like that time my brother came home with a young lady named Jola Calandra, and my mama's eyes popped out of her head like, where have I gone wrong? But she was cool as hell.
The thing about my wife's family that I think throws people is, like, tell them that, like, my wife went to private school for much of her life, and she went to, like, a fancy law school and is very smart, and her parents are doctors and her aunts and uncles are lawyers and they're black in D.C. However, her grandfather was a numbers runner, and that's how everyone got to get into
school. Oh, they like the Kennedys.
So there is, at all family functions.
Okay, no, we there. Everything makes sense. Yeah, there's a gap in your wife I didn't fully understand. It all makes sense.
Oh, yeah, yeah. There is a connection. Whereas my connection is a lot closer. My people weren't as good at crime as her people were. They weren't as good at crime. My people got caught and got locked up. It was low level. And me making some football money is made it a little different for the people closest to me.
Oh, no, we all good. I didn't realize your wife was Ashley Corleone. You know what I'm saying? Like, okay.
Yeah, it's a little different. It's a little different. So, yeah, we a lot closer to the element, as all black people are. We are just one degree away from the element at all times, no matter how successful you are, one degree away.
That is Dominique Foxworth. Check him out on Get Up. Check him out on Anscape. Check him out on Debatable. Check him out on First Take. Check him out everywhere. And, of course, check him out on The Dominique Foxworth Show, available for download wherever you get this podcast. My man, I appreciate you.
Oh, it's the best time of my week, man.
Hey, man. And ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. Thanks for watching us on YouTube. Hit the voicemail line, 860-516-4119. We normally ask y'all about the time you tried your dad, but now that y'all are getting older, tell us about that time that your son tried you or your daughter for the ladies. 860-516-4119. Parker Owens and Adi Khan handling everything behind the scenes. Thank you, gentlemen. Remember, follow the right time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater, and we'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or follow on the ESPN app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.